Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. I'm right here with the man of the hour, my good buddy Brent Johnson. Brent, DXY, what is it, 107 right now?
Yeah, it's closed to just above 107 today.
First of all, bravo. Congratulations. I mean, you're one of the smartest guys I know, but I know with your call, you know, the dollar going higher, the timing might not have been perfect, but you get a lot of flack on Twitter. The trolls give you a hell of a hard time. And I first and foremost want to congratulate you, because it'd be very easy for you to just completely dunk on a lot of people out there in social media. But it seems to me you're taking the high road, which I might be dunking a little bit,
but not too classy as you are. Not too excessive.
Well,
it's
so
part of the game. Talking trash is part of the game.
Yeah, sure. But I don't think you're at the level that I think you're dishing out a lot less than you received. You know, the first question I've got for you that I thought about this morning as I was kind of tweeting out about the giving you props there, is it seemed like the most obnoxious trolls on Twitter are the Bitcoiners and the dollar bears. And so I'm thinking maybe that's like a contrarian indicator, you know, in the future that you try to somehow quantify the obnoxiousness of specific trolls, and then you know when to fade them. You think there's anything to that?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of these, you know, priced in Bitcoin graphs lately. You know,
yeah, exactly. Okay, so we're at 107 now. Seems like we probably run a ways. It could go down, you know, 104, 103. I don't understand the technicals too much. I don't get into that, but I did look just at a chart before we came on here, and it looks like the next level of resistance, if that's the right word, would be at like 118. So how do you see it kind of play out over the next 6 months?
Well, I think we're probably going to test that area sometime in the second half of the year. You know, when exactly? I mean, it could be as soon as next week, or maybe it's December or January. I've given up trying to predict exactly the timing. I just can't figure out how it doesn't happen, to be quite honest. And so I don't have the luxury of ignoring it, I guess is the right way to say it. Because if I'm even a little bit right of what the knock-on effects will be, they'll be massive. And, you know, I don't think anybody will be safe. And the idea that, since all fiat gets debased, you don't really have to worry about the relative values of fiat against each other, I think that argument is just completely wrong. So, I think for anybody who doesn't understand why the dollar is going higher, I would encourage them to try to figure out why. Hopefully I have helped in that arena to some extent, but you know, there's other people out there as well. As much as you may personally not like the dollar, or as much as you may personally think that gold and Bitcoin and everything else should be trending higher, it's not, you know, and that's the reality on the screens. And perhaps the monetary authorities can get everything under control, and perhaps the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank can manage their crises that are already starting in a way that, you know, supports the economy and doesn't kill the currency. But I just don't think they can do it. So I think this is going to continue to play out. And I think it's going to probably, you know, cascade into a rolling crisis.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm very bullish on gold. And I think everyone should own Bitcoin, not because of the price, but just to have some purchasing power outside the system. But I'm very, very excited, because these are things that I'd like to own long term. So I'd love for the price to come down. I mean, I'd love for gold to be at 1500. I mean, Bitcoin at 10,000, 5,000, that would be fantastic for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of a longer term bear. But you mentioned those knock-on effects that you're thinking through. Do you want to dive into those?
Well, if you think about what's happening now, and I saw your tweet earlier. I can't remember exactly what it said, but it might have. I saw a couple of them today.
Said that you got two options, either a global economic depression or Plaza Accord 2.0 if this trend continues, meaning the DXY continuing to go up.
And I think it's the former that will cause the latter. I mean, they're not going to come out tomorrow and do a Plaza Accord at these levels. It's not necessary to do that. Well, it might be necessary, but I don't think they have the political capital to come out and do it right now. They would wait for a lot more pain before they did that. So I think it's the crisis that would cause some kind of a Plaza Accord. I do ultimately think that the dollar will get so strong that they will have to do something like that. Now, whether it's the same format or something different, but you know, we just kind of use the Plasma Core 2.0 as a changing of the system or a reset of some kind. Yeah. I mean, what I think people need to understand is the whole argument of whether the milkshake theory is an inflationary theory or a deflationary theory, or if you can have inflation while the dollar goes higher. And the reality is that it's a combination of all of that together. And you can't just think of it on a domestic basis. I think that's another thing is a lot of people think of it on a domestic basis in their own country or their own currency. And it really kind of depends on where you live and what currency you're denominated or what currency you're doing business in and what your different exposures are. And so the knock-on effects as the dollar gets stronger, it's not just the fact that, you know, there's a lot of dollar debt out there, which the whole world owes, not just the United States. The whole world has borrowed a substantial amount in dollars. So they have to get the dollars to service the debt. They have to get the dollars to pay off the debt when it comes due. But they also have to use the dollar for trading. Now, you might say they don't have to. They could go use gold or Bitcoin or whatever. Yeah, they could. But the majority of the world is not going to do that. You may find it at the margins, but the majority of the world, the big players still use the dollar as their trading mechanism. And if you get inflationary pressures in local currency terms and deflationary pressures in dollar terms, in other words, the dollar is going up and it's putting deflationary pressure on you because now your funding costs have increased.
Right.
But then at the same time, we have supply shortages and we have all the remnants of all the stimulus. So inflation is high. So all the things that you need to survive and to do your business and trade and eat has gone up in price. And those things are priced in dollars. So if you live in Ghana or you live in Ecuador or you live in
even Colombia here
or Colombia, you know, you look at that, those currencies have fallen significantly against the dollar. And those countries are going to have to print their own currency to go buy dollars to then import energy and food and, you know, the other necessities. And that actually makes the situation worse, but that's what they'll do because that's what governments always do, right? And so, and that's a knock-on effect. And so then when those countries go down, then their trading partners get into trouble. And so, you know, you get a contagion and then it goes from one country to a couple countries and then the whole region gets in trouble and then a whole continent gets in trouble. And eventually you have a global crisis. Now it's not going to go in a straight line, but that's kind of what I see developing. And I think it will ultimately manifest in a global currency crisis. I should point out, I don't think this is going to play out over a 6-month period. It could. You have to be prepared for that, but I think it's going to be more like 6 years than right. 6 months. And so there will be, you know, starts and stops, and there'll be, you know, spikes up and pullbacks. And so I don't think this is going to be just a one-way street from here on out. And I certainly don't think that my thesis is guaranteed to play out. I think it will play out, but I don't know, right? I'm planning on it, but I have to be prepared to be wrong as well.
Yeah. Good point. All about probabilities. There are no certainties. And I think a lot of it is country specific based on their balance sheet, not just how much dollar denominated debt they have, but also how much dollar or how many dollar assets they have. You know, if they've got a stockpile of treasuries, well, that could give them a little wiggle room there because they've got something to sell to get those dollars they need to get the energy. Yeah. You know, when I was at lunch, I was kind of thinking through just the easiest example I could give people to get their head around that concept you just outlined. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think basically what this is like is if you have a rental property, let's say in the United States, and it would be like having a rental property, you've got, let's say, $300 a month in positive cash flow. Let's just say that your mortgage payment is, you know, $1,000 a month. It would be like having an adjustable rate mortgage that adjusts literally every single day or every single minute and can possibly adjust higher to where your mortgage payment was $100, $200, $300 more to where now your cash flow negative within the span of 2 or 3 weeks. That's what's happening at a country level.
That's absolutely correct. It's a variable rate that changes every day. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So then what happens
a little differently, but functionally it's the same thing.
So then let's take this example to the next level, where if you're that property owner and now all of a sudden you've got negative cash flow because your interest rate or your basically your mortgage payment has gone up to such a degree. Now, what do you have to do? Well, in order to maintain that property, you've got to sell other assets that are on your balance sheet or use your existing cash flow. Yeah. But we've got a problem there because now those assets on your balance sheet or the existing cash flow, let's say from your job or your business, is denominated in a different currency. Therefore, in order to pay down that mortgage that's now getting more and more of a burden, you've got to sell whatever it is on your balance sheet or your income to get those dollars you need to pay your mortgage, which creates more supply of dollar or of currency XYZ and more demand for the dollars, which makes your mortgage payment go up and continue to go up.
Well, yeah, and then imagine a couple of your tenants lose their job and they move out. So not only is your cash flow negative, it's gotten significantly more negative, right?
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, good. I'm glad I was able to kind of think that through out loud because I think I'm going to use it on a whiteboard video tomorrow. Because I think that's something that everyone can understand and it resonates with most people that I think are on this live stream or watch the video. All right, so one thing I'd like to go over right now, though, is something we kind of a thought experiment we did at Rebel Capitalist Live. And it's another thing that I've tried to do myself today is just say, okay, everything to me seems like the dollar is going higher. Let me take a pause here and try to figure out what needs to happen in order for the dollar to go back down to, let's say, 95 or 90. And we talked about an interest rate differential, which Snyder, I think, didn't really go along with that midterm, long-term, because I think his argument was, okay, sure, you might have some capital flowing to the United States because, or outside the United States because, you know, the Fed is lowering rates, the Japanese central bank, the ECB is increasing rates. Sure, on the margin that might happen, but you're talking about a global recession, if not depression, where those cash flows are going to be decreased, and that's still, over the long run, going to put upward pressure on the dollar relative to those other fiat currencies. So I guess maybe if you could go through some arguments or some ways that the dollar could go down, and then we could maybe get into some more nuance with our discussion at Rebel Capitalist Live.
Sure. Well, the first thing, I mean, the dollar could go down 2 or 3% over the next week. I mean, just on nothing, nothing other than...
Overbought,
right? So, you know, and I'm sure, and I would be willing to bet a lot of money on this, as soon as that happens, the dollar bearers will be back out there and say, see, that was it. That was the top. He's been proven wrong. What an idiot. He just doesn't understand the way the system works. All that kind of stuff. So, but I mean, that could easily happen. But for something more sustained, what I think you would have to happen is you would have to see the U.S. go back to some kind of easy money policy, whether that's cutting rates or QE or, you know, stimulus or whatever it is, maybe a combination of all three of those. But I think you would have to see that in conjunction with either the same level of monetary policy in other parts of the world or tighter monetary policy in other parts of the world. So in other words, you'd have to for it to go back to like 95 and kind of stay there for, I don't know, 6 months or a year, I think you would have to have tighter monetary policy in other parts of the world. I have a really hard time figuring out how that happens, but I can't rule it out. I suppose it's possible, right? I think it's a very low probability, but anything's possible. That would be one way. The other thing is we could overnight, maybe they do come out with Plaza Accord 2.0. You know, maybe they've been working on this for the last 2 years in secret, and it's in conjunction with some kind of central bank digital currency. And we wake up next Monday and there was a secret meeting in Rome where they all got together and they said, okay, this is the new system. This is how it's going to work. And over the next 6 months, the dollar is going to be decreased in value by 30% and da 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 da. And, you know, it's everything's now denominated in a basket of, you know, currencies and commodities. That's possible.
Yeah.
I think it's highly unlikely, but it's possible. Mm. I think the other thing that could happen, again, very low probability, But one thing that could happen is if there was some kind of a military conflict in which the U.S. suffered an immediate and devastating defeat overnight. And it was very clear that we had lost, then I suppose there's a way that the dollar would fall, because whoever had done that to us and had, you know, knocked us off the mountain, so to speak, would then be in a better position to, you know, exert their will or their way of doing things or their system on the rest of the world. Again, I think that's highly, highly unlikely. Can't rule it out as impossible, but extremely low probability. But that would probably do it, because, I mean, at the end of the day, currencies are faith-based systems. You know, it's a network. And as everybody, as long as everybody has faith and everybody believes in the network and it reinforces the network works. But, you know, it's like a bank run. When one person leaves, then another person leaves. If enough people leave and confidence is lost, then that currency or that institution, whatever it is, the value is gone. And so, you know, anything that would shake that, and again, not just shake it, but shake it fundamentally to its core and kind of bring the walls down, then the dollar could go down and stay down. But everything that I've said so far to me is very low probability. What is a higher probability is that we do get some kind of a temporary time period where the U.S. is easing and the rest of the world is not.
Right.
And over that time period, the dollar falls on a relative basis. But then 6 months, a year later, the rest of the world is now in more trouble than they are now, because now their currencies have appreciated, right? Their export economies, they've got very low growth. They've got their own problems, but now their currencies are 10% more expensive or higher valued. So now, you know, that hurts their exports. And so then they start to get in trouble. And then I think we just end up right back where we are right now. Again, we're kind of, what we're talking about, George, is really a replay of everything we've seen for the last 2 years, right? In 2019, I was talking about this in 2019 and 2020, right? And I said, it's inevitable, the dollar's gonna get stronger and it's gonna create problems. Well, that happened in March of 2020. They came out, they did this massive QE, stimulus, helicopter money, everything. And for a year, the dollar fell, right? And a lot of people thought that was it. The dollar's headed to 85 and 80 and 75. But a year later, here we are. And the dollar's at 107, highest point in 20 years. And it's because the rest of the world is in the same shape as us. And they eventually had to do the same things to their currencies. And they're still doing those things to their currencies while we are tightening. And so I cannot figure out how, outside of just a massive reset, we don't end up back where we are. I can come up with a number of scenarios where the dollar falls for a while. I can't come up with a very good high probability scenario where it falls and stays down.
And you know what's ironic too, now that I'm thinking it through, is the CPI in the United States could push the dollar higher on the DXY. Oh, yeah. Because if inflation stays high, let's say we go from 8.6 to 9.5 to 10%, then this incentivizes Jerome Powell to raise rates, not just to 2.25, yeah, but to 3 to, yeah, 4. And then you've got that interest rate differential, if you will, with other countries expanding to a greater degree, even if they are raising rates, which would potentially strengthen the dollar even more. So as that's kind of the paradox here, is as the inflation, as the dollar loses value in the United States, it would potentially gain more value outside the United States.
That's exactly right. That is the milkshake. I mean, that's what it is. And on a relative basis, the U.S. looks great, or better. I shouldn't say great. The U.S. looks better. And it kind of perpetuates the system. And for anybody who's not heard me talk about this before, and this is the first time listening, if you have any doubt that this is possible, just go back to 2007 or 8 and look at your cost of living and ask yourself whether your cost of living has gone up over the last 15 years, right? Then look and see where the stock market was in 2007 or 2008 and look and see where it's now and see if it's higher or lower. And then look and see where commodity prices were then and look where they're at now. Look at food prices then, look at where they're at now. And then look and see where the dollar was then and look where it is now.
Right.
The dollar's 25% higher than it was 15 years ago. I mean, You don't have to like that, but that's a fact. I'm sorry, it is. Despite all the QE, despite all the stimulus, despite the helicopter money, despite all the, you know, crazy programs, both from a federal stimulus and, you know, monetary policy perspective, the dollar has strengthened versus its peers. Now, you might hate it on an absolute basis, but on a relative basis, it's massively outperforming its peers. It's just a fact.
Yeah. One other thing we discussed at Rebel Capitalist Live that could bring the dollar back down, but I think is probably maybe just as unlikely as those other things you listed, is if we had a global economic boom, because then you get the banks and the euro dollar system. Money becomes easy, if you will, quote unquote, and or loose, and therefore there's just plenty of dollar liquidity and plenty of dollar loans, plenty of new dollars being created outside of the United States, and therefore dollar goes down. That is another possibility. But again, if you look at the yield curve, if you look at the euro dollar futures curve, if you look at what's going on in Western Europe and Russia, Ukraine, the United States, China, boy, oh boy, I don't see an economic, global economic boom on the horizon.
But you know, that's a good point. That is another way. If somehow some new technology was invented or some new energy source was found and it allowed us to go back to a high growth economy due to, you know, being able to more efficiently produce what we produce. And, you know, now there's growth potential. And so the banks start making loans and, you know, you get this economic engine going again, then this, the system is able to be perpetuated. But I would say, and so maybe we can kick the can down the road another 10 years. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier. I was talking about, you know, you realize it's almost 10 years ago exactly that Mario Draghi, you know, saved the euro. He said, anybody who thinks the euro is going to fail needs to think again, because we are committed to making it last. And believe me, it will be enough. And I'll be damned if it ain't 10 years later. And he was right. They were able to kick the can down the road for 10 years. But now here we are again, 10 years later. He was able to kick it for quite a distance, but we have finally come back up on those problems again. Southern Europe is starting to get into trouble. The bond yields on Southern European countries are starting to rise. The spread between German bonds and, you know, these Southern countries is gapping up, and it's forcing the ECB to come back in with these extraordinary measures again.
Yeah, Operation Twist. Right?
Yeah, so
it's,
I mean,
Southern Europe, Northern Europe, Operation Twist.
Yeah. Well, and this is kind of why I say I don't think the central banks are out of bullets. I think these people are much more powerful and have many more tricks than people give them credit for. And it's why I think that this could play out for another 5 or 6 years rather than just 5 or 6 months. And maybe we get into a period of time where the dollar rises for another 6 months and then it falls for a year or two and then it takes off again. But I don't think that this is resolved without the dollar going much higher before it's all said and done.
Yeah. And just to clarify for the audience, when I was talking about Operation Twist, what I'm referring to is the ECB, selling Northern Europe or German bonds in order to buy Southern or Italy bonds. So the interest rate goes up on the German bonds, interest rate goes down. So basically you're bailing out Italy at the expense of Germany.
And how do you think Germany feels about that? You think they're
that's where I was going with that.
By the way, Germany, your borrowing costs are going up, but the Greeks are now going to have a lower rate.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you know what they call this? This is a way that they're going to bring unity among the countries. Mm. They're going to prevent fragmentation by doing this, by pitting one country against another. They're going to prevent fragmentation. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so. Let's kind of dive into that a little bit deeper. I know what the euro is very close to parity. Is that just a number that's just, it's a parity, who cares? Or is there more to it than that?
Well, it's kind of both, right? I mean, on the one hand, it's just a number. But the other hand, it's a reflection of the faith in the currency. And, you know, the faith in the currency potentially ends up leading to faith in the European Union as a whole, right?
Right. And then you combine that with what we were just saying, yeah.
Right. And so I do think if it was just numbers, I think the euro would have already be gone. The European Union would already be gone. But the EU and the European, I don't know, effort or idea, however you want to describe that, is much more than just numbers. It's kind of a political ideal, right? It's a political animal. It's a government animal. It's a power animal. It's not just numbers, right? And that's why I always say, you know, going back to the dollar too, it's not just a numbers thing. It doesn't have to make sense. It just, you know, the whoever has the most power can kind of have their way. You know, it'll eventually fall, right? All empires eventually fall, but in the short term, it doesn't have to make sense for it to happen, right? I mean, how many times have you had, like, when you were a kid and your parents told you to do something and you didn't want to do it because it didn't make any sense, and they said, because I said so. It didn't have to make sense. They were the boss, right? And you had to do it. It's kind of the same way now. It's like, of course it doesn't make sense. Of course a lot of this stuff is just complete nonsense, but it doesn't mean it won't happen anyway, right? And the European Union, it's, you know, we don't need to get into kind of the whole one world government thing, but power always wants to expand. And power never wants to, you know, decrease. It always wants to expand. And the European Union was in many ways started as a way to reunify a broken Europe after World War II, right? And if we can all become one country or one nation or one federation or one union, then we won't be fighting with each other and there won't be another world war. And, you know, that's actually lasted for 80 years, right? I mean, you could say from that perspective, it's been a success. But we all know that everything cycles, everything eventually comes around, and everything that was nice eventually, you know, the spring becomes the summer becomes the fall becomes the winter. And, you know, I think we're past the spring and the summer. We're definitely in the fall. I don't know if we're in the winter yet, but if we're not, we're getting pretty damn close. And, you know, but the people and the institutions and the governments, and they have done a lot of work and spent a lot of money. And not just spent money, but spent a lot of political capital keeping the European Union together.
Right.
And they are not just going to let that disintegrate overnight. I mean, this think back to Brexit, right? How long did Brexit last? 5 years? And that was just with the UK leaving. Imagine now that Italy wants to leave, or Greece wants to leave, or maybe Germany wants to leave. I don't know. What's that saying? You know, there's decades where nothing happens, and then days where decades happen.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how it happens, and maybe that's kind of where we're headed. But it won't. The European Union will not disintegrate without a fight. Yeah. I think it will fall, but I think it will be. I just don't think it's going to happen overnight. I think it's going to be a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macro economics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. You know, one thing I was thinking about is we all realize how addicted the U.S. economy is to, I'm not going to say loose money, because I agree to a certain extent with what Snyder always talks about, which is really, you know, a Milton Friedman concept that lower rates is really a result of tight money, not loose money. And it's kind of the opposite there. But we are addicted to cheap money. I'll put it that way. But in thinking through other economies, they're just as addicted to cheap, not just cheap money, but cheap dollars, in the sense that if you think about how we got to where we are today and why there's all this demand for dollars, even though it doesn't make sense, it's because dollar funding, not only did you need it for your input costs, but it was very cheap. If you're a Colombian entity, you can borrow in pesos at 10%, or you can borrow in dollars at 3%.
Right.
What are you going to do if you think that you can drum up that dollar cash flow in the future? So I think people just need to understand that it's not just the U.S. that's addicted to cheap dollars. It's really the global economy. In order for something to completely replace the dollar global monetary system, there would have to be a cheaper source of funding.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing, George, and I think a lot of people forget this, is maybe they don't forget it, or maybe they just haven't thought it through completely. But let's go back to Europe for a second. I think everybody now sees the crisis coming in Europe, right? For the last couple of years, there were many people who were arguing that the Europe was in better shape than the U.S. and that the euro would rally versus the dollar. Well, they've kind of stopped making that argument recently with all that's going on with the energy markets. But most people can now see a crisis developing in Europe, and they say by the fall or the winter, you know, many industries are not going to be able to function. You're basically going to not necessarily have a collapse, but have a severe recession in Europe, right? Okay, so let's pretend that happens and you have entire industries fail in Europe. Do you think it's going to be a great investment environment in the United States if that happens? Or you think it's going to be a great investment environment in China or Russia? No, because now they're one of their biggest customers has just gone out of business and can no longer buy their goods, right? So Europe going bankrupt is not a great thing for Russia. Oh, and then people say, well, China will buy it all. Well, no, they won't, because China's biggest customer is Europe, or one of their biggest customers is Europe. So now China doesn't have all their revenue. So they don't have the revenue to buy the oil from Russia, right? Or they don't have the same ability to do it. And so, you know, this idea that Europe's going to go into this deep freeze and China and Russia are going to be flying high, it's absurd. It's just, you have not thought that through. That's how you think it's going to play. Now, they may be better off on a relative basis, the same way that I talk about the U.S. being better off on a relative basis, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a good environment there. And so that's if it happens here. Now let's say it's the United States. Let's take it away. Let's say that Europe somehow is able to avoid this crisis. And let's say that the U.S. is not able to avoid this crisis. Let's say we go into a massive recession for whatever reason. Okay. So now, does that mean things are great in Europe and things are great in China?
Well, but where are they going to get the dollars, Brent? Because if we're the number one customer for Colombia, right, let's say, that Colombia widget maker get their dollars now if they're not selling anything to the U.S.?
Exactly. So not only, exactly. So now... And there is not a scenario where the U.S. goes into a massive recession and everybody else does well. I know I can't say it's impossible, because nothing is impossible, but it is about as low a probability as I can come up with that the U.S. goes into a massive recession and the rest of the world does great. It's just, it will not happen that way. So please do not put 100% of your portfolio into that kind of a scenario.
Yeah, or even if they do relatively better, it still seems as though it would be bullish for the dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
Globally on the DXY. Let's for a moment rewind to 2011, and I think this might be redundant, but it'll be good for people to kind of see this example to maybe figure out the probabilities of this happening in the next year or two. The dollar was at maybe 70, 75. I think it hit a low point in 2011. Why did it hit that low point? What took it from wherever it was in, I don't know where it was at its previous high point, maybe 2000 or something. What took it down to 70 or 75 in 2011?
Well, the big thing was we had the dot-com crash in 2000, and then we had 9/11 attacks in 2001. And the reaction to those two events was Greenspan just cutting rates for like 6 or 7 years in a row. Right. I can't remember when Greenspan left. I think he left in like 2006 or seven. And then Bernanke, I think, took over in like 2007.
That sounds right.
And because I remember when, you know, when 2008 started to kind of develop this subprime and we started to get kind of this debt drawdown, everybody's like, oh, it's no problem because we got Ben Bernanke and he did his thesis on, you know, the Great Depression. He's the perfect guy to see us through this. But long story short, the reason the dollar had fallen from, you know, let's call it early 2000 to right before the financial crisis was because of, you know, very loose monetary policy. And at that time, the whole world wasn't in the same mess, right? You could leave the US, you could go to Europe, you could, China was still growing, you could go to China, you could go to Argentina or Venezuela. I think even Venezuela at the time was doing really well because oil was priced high and they didn't have the crazy government yet. So there was other places you could go with your capital. So if its capital left the United States, you know, the dollar fell and other currencies rose on a relative basis. But then as you got into 2007 and 2008 and you started to get this global collateral squeeze or this global contraction, and since the dollar is the global currency, now the dollar starts to rise because there's still demand for the dollar, but there's just not as much supply anymore, right?
Right.
And then as you got into 2008 and even into 2009, with, you know, now you don't just have low growth, now you've got credit collapse, right? Yeah. Like literal collapses where companies like GE were like a day away from going bankrupt, right? And so it was a literal run on the global bank. I mean, the global bank runs on dollars. And so in 2008, you saw the dollar spike. 2008-09, the dollar spike. But then from 2009 to the middle, so for 2 years, from the middle of 2009 to the middle of 2011, they did QE. You know, that's when Bernanke, who had, again, studied the Great Depression, knew how to handle it, came in and did QE and flooded the, you know, the market, said we're going to put enough liquidity in there, and you know they were able to do that in a way that recapitalized the system, allowed people to get their funding, and for a year or two it didn't take off and do fantastic, but it worked, right? But then it started to happen in Europe, and then like in 2010, I mean Europe had trouble in the 2000 global financial crisis as well, but then they went into their, they had like a year or two of relative, I don't know, let's say it was okay. But then by 2011, the countries themselves started to get in trouble because they had done the same thing on their central banks, right? The ECB had done bailouts as well. And then, you know, it had bubbled, the bad debts had bubbled up onto the country balance sheets rather than the corporate balance sheets and the bank balance sheets. But then the countries themselves started to get in trouble. Their rates started to go higher. You know, there was trouble getting funding for, you know, a number of the pig countries. Can you imagine that they were called pigs? They must have hated that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, and that led to the European crisis, the Euro crisis. And that's when, again, 10 years ago, 2012, when Draghi came out and said, we will do whatever it takes to save the union.
Yeah. Then the dollar starts going up. And I want to remind people that the supply of dollars outside the United States, to a certain degree, it's a function of our trade deficit. That's just, I think, a drop in the bucket. It's really more of a function of how many dollars are being lent into existence by these banks in the Eurodollar system. And then also, what is the velocity of those dollars outside the U.S.? Because that's going to lead to either more or less supply. So even as an example, even if they're not lending more, if you get more economic activity, therefore the velocity increases, then you're going to have the supply demands being being met most likely. And it's going to put a lot less pressure on those individuals with the dollar debt. But to a certain degree, even if you have the amount of dollars increasing, if the velocity is going down, it's going to have a supply crunch. And if you've got the dollar supply decreasing or the extension of dollar credit decreasing while velocity is going down, that, again, probably puts us in or explains why we're at 107 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. The way I kind of, the example I kind of use is imagine you're out for a walk in the woods, right? And you come across these two ponds. And one pond is just a self-contained pond. And the other pond has a little stream that's coming into it.
Oh, there you go.
It's fed by, okay. So the one pond has a little bit of circulation. You can kind of see some flow of the water. It's moving around. But the other pond is just sitting there. There's no movement of the liquid. It's there, but it's just not moving. So that there's zero velocity there, right? Now, based on the way our system is designed, we need velocity for it to survive. And the reason is because all that money's loaned into existence. After a year, whatever it is, you have to pay interest on that money. And so you need more money by the end of the year than there's already in the system. So in order to service the debt, you either need circulation of money to service it, or you need new money put in. So there's only one group that can put new money in. Now, the bank, so let's go to that pond that's just sitting there, right? You could have, if the banks were to start lending, maybe you would get some flow in that pond. But if you got no velocity, there's only one group that can throw new money into the pond. And so they throw rocks into the pond, right? And you get ripples out. And maybe those ripples last for a minute or two. But 5 minutes later, it's back to being it's just still. There's no more velocity.
Right.
But on the other pond, you know, you've got the stream that's coming in. It's a steady flow of new liquidity coming in. And that, it not only puts more liquidity into the pond, but it encourages the circulation of the water that's already there, or right, helps the water that's already there circulate. And that's kind of the monetary system. As long as new money's coming in and it's encouraging velocity and you get, you know, that movement of liquidity, then the system functions. But the problem is outside the United States in the euro dollar market, there is nobody who can even throw new rocks into the pond, right?
Or be willing to, because why would you throw a rock in a pond if you're not going to get that rock back?
Exactly. And so, you know, that's the problem with having this two-tiered system. This is the Triffin's dilemma that you've maybe heard me talk about before. I know you've done whiteboards on it. But for people who are kind of new to this, look up Triffin's dilemma. It basically says when one country's domestic currency is also used as a global reserve currency, there will come a point where the needs of the domestic economy come into conflict with the needs of the global economy. And that's kind of where we're at. We need higher rates in the United States, but the outside world can't handle it. We might not be able to handle it either, but we can handle it better than they can. And so we've got this conflict. And you know, the rest of the world needs us to throw more stones into the pond, but instead of throwing more stones into the pond, we've got a ladle and we're scooping it out, right? So, but that's the system. That's the way it's designed. And in my opinion, until the system, the design of the system is addressed, this problem is going to persist.
How do you see the dominoes falling? And I'll let you go because I know I've kept you way too long here. I appreciate your time, but I mean, we see what's happening with Sri Lanka. We've had a couple more countries. I'm sure you've been following it in the last couple weeks that have fallen into the same problems. Obviously, Turkey has been in that boat for quite a while. But is it just where these smaller countries, where their balance sheet is very susceptible to this slowing of the circulation of the water in the pond, that are going to fall off, and then it's just the countries that are most susceptible, and then you kind of go one layer above that and one layer. So it starts with the Sri Lankas, then it moves to the Argentinas, and then it moves to the Europes. I don't know.
I think that's right. And we're already starting to see stirrings of it in Europe and Japan, right? I mean, you go look at a chart of the euro and the yen, and they're dramatic. They're very dramatic charts, and they shouldn't be taken lightly. So these are the two big, other than the dollar, these are the two biggest currencies in the world, and they're already starting to feel these effects. So imagine, you know, the countries like Colombia and Ecuador and Sri Lanka and Ghana and, you know, Turkey, and they are feeling it as well. And that's why I say I think this is eventually going to, I think it is going to, for the most part, I think Europe and Japan probably have more tools to deal with it than a smaller country like Sri Lanka or Colombia or whoever it is. So I do still think it will start at these very peripheral countries, but it's already started there, right? So you're going to start to see the contagion, and you're going to start to see it happening in these bigger regional countries. And eventually it'll go global.
All right.
You know, I've said this for a long time, and it's taken a lot longer to develop than I thought. But I don't think we're out of the woods yet. I think we're going to have a global currency crisis. Go back and look. You know, we had an Asian currency crisis in the late 90s. I think in the early 90s with the Mexican tequila crisis. They called it the tequila crisis. You know, we've had the South America has had currency crisis many times. You know, the famous one is Weimar, you know, from 100 years ago. I try not to use that because it's such an extreme example, but, you know, it did happen. I think that's what we're going to see again. I think we're going to have these currency crises, but rather than just be these regional currency crises, I think it's going to go global because it's such a global economy now.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Great conversation. I appreciate you coming on live in such short notice. I just, obviously with the dollar where it was, I wanted to reach out and see if we could get your thoughts and your insights, which have been tremendous. For the viewers who want to find out more about what you do, where can they go?
Go to your channel first and just search for me. I've done a number of interviews here and I always enjoy talking to you there. I think they're always very informative. So people that are trying to learn about this topic, I would encourage them to do that. If you go to YouTube or Google and type in Santiago Capital or Brent Johnson or Milkshake Theory, you'll probably get a number of links that you can use. I'm very active on Twitter. You can search Santiago Capital. It's a shell. It's a black background with a white seashell on it. That's my handle is Santiago AU Fund. But I'm pretty active on social media. So, and I do a number of podcasts like these. So, there's plenty of material out there at this point.
Absolutely. And I'd like to remind everyone on the live stream that Brent is one of my pros in Rebel Capitalist Pro, where he periodically gets on there and is nice enough to answer questions to the members of Rebel Capitalist Pro. So,
The other thing I'd say is that my pinned tweet, if you're new to this and you haven't seen it before, go to the pinned tweet on my Twitter profile, and there's a little 5-minute video that kind of explains the thesis in kind of a short format.
Okay. All right, buddy. Appreciate your time. Can't wait to talk again.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Bye.